I'll read the English translation to those verses from verses 7 onwards. The son of Chakshu, known as Chakshusha, was the sixth Manu. He had many sons, headed by Puru, Purusha and Sadyumna. During the reign of Chakshusha Manu, the king of heaven was known as Mantradruma. Among the demigods were the Apyas, and among the great sages were Avishman and Viraka. In the sixth Manvatara millennium, Lord Vishnu, the master of the universe, appeared in his partial expansion. He was begotten by Vairaja in the womb of his wife, Devasambhuti, and his name was Ajita. By the churning the ocean of milk, Ajita produced nectar for the demigods in the form of a tortoise. He moved here and there, carrying on his back the great mountain known as Mandara. King Parikshit inquired, "O great Brahmana Sukadeva Goswami, why and how did Lord Vishnu churn the ocean of milk? For what reason did he stay in the water as a tortoise and hold up the Mandara mountain? How did the demigods obtain the nectar? And what other things were produced from the churning of the ocean? Kindly describe all these wonderful activities of the Lord." My heart, which is disturbed by the three miserable conditions of material life, is not yet sated with hearing you describe the glorious activities of the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the Master of the devotees. Suta Goswami said, "O learned Brahmanas, assembled here at Namasharanya with Sukadeva Goswami, the sons of Dabhyana was thus questioned by the king. He congratulated the king and then endeavored to describe further the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead." So we come to today's verses. So if you could repeat after me. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Sukadev Goswami said, "When the Asuras, with their serpent weapons, severely attacked the demigod in a fight, many of the demigods fell and lost their lives. Indeed, they could not be revived. At that time, O king, the demigods had been cursed by Durvasa Muni. The three worlds were poverty-stricken, and therefore ritualistic ceremonies could not be performed. The effects of this were very serious." Purport. It is described that while Durvasa Muni was passing on the road, he saw Indra on the back of his elephant and was pleased to offer Indra a garland from his own neck. Indra, however, being too puffed up, took the garland and, without respect for Durvasa Muni, he placed it on the trunk of his carrier elephant. The elephant, being an animal, could not understand the value of the garland, and thus the elephant threw the garland between its legs and smashed it. Seeing this insulting behavior, Devasa Muni, immediately cursed Indra to be poverty-stricken, bereft of all material opulence. Thus, the demigods, afflicted on one side of the fight, by the fighting demons and on the other by the curse of Durvasa Muni, lost all material opulences in the three worlds. To be extremely opulent in materialistic advancement is sometimes very risky. The materially opulent person does not care about anyone, and thus he commits offence to great personalities, such as devotees and great saints. This is the way of material opulence, as described by Sukadeva Goswami. Dana durma dandaha. Too much wealth makes one blind. This happens even to Indra in his heavenly kingdom, and what to speak of others in this material world. When one is materially opulent, he should learn to be sober and well behaved towards Vaishnavas and saintly persons, otherwise he will fall down. Om Adana Timarantasya Jyanan Jyana Salake Chakshuron Melatum Yena Tasme Sri Gurave Namah. So there's a moral to the story. Indra is involved again somehow or other. Indra seems to be the center of so many controversies throughout this Bhagavatam, with the Lord, with great sages, saints. He gets into so much trouble. And Durvasa Muni, he's known for his somewhat emotional nature. Or his reacting to situations, which can give forth to a curse to some person, either a saintly person or a not so saintly person. He's a special great soul, in which so many pastimes seem to be hinged around this Durvasa Muni, very unpredictable personality, and yet referred to as a great sage. And it shows the variation in the nature of great souls. We don't know who they are, what their position is relative to ourselves or the Supreme Lord. I remember somebody advised me when coming to the manor that we should, you know, if you're living there, you can't tell who these people are. They said that. They said that basically it may seem like there's some nonsense there, but actually you don't know that person's relationship with the Lord internally, what they're like, and how they're striving, and what their tapasya is, and what difficulties they're going through. He said, so he gave me this advice. You know, you must beware of this making any judgments, you know, with anyone. So we have to be careful. We could be maybe careful of observing the actions and maybe learning how to behave ourselves. You know, we can learn from others and what happens to others and the reactions to others. But with regards to actually condemning a person, we have to be very careful. So we have here, is the warning statement. When one is materially opulent, he should learn to be sober and well-behaved towards Vaishnavas and saintly persons, otherwise he will fall down. I wanted to point out personally this. You know, we have this mental impression of who are Vaishnavas and who are saintly persons. But as certainly the experience through the years of being living at the manor, actually there are many, many saintly persons that may not seem saintly, but they are. And just in observation, that though we have certain characteristics that make us unusual to each other, that's a sort of a thing, we're all different characters, but actually we're all special and unique in the eyes of the Lord. And so we have this wonderful verse in the chapter 9, the text 30. He says that basically, my devotee never falls down, even though he commits the most abominable action. And then he confirms why. He says, because he's rightly situated in his determination. And Prabhupada explains the situation of the conditioned souls in this world, where we're subject to the modes of material nature. It says in the Bhagavad Gita that actually if we surrender, we're not subject to the modes of material nature. But in this process, this learning process, we still have a certain body with certain characteristics. And Prabhupada makes the remark that we have habits from our previous life, this life, and previous lifetimes, for so many lifetimes. And so it's to be understood that the Supreme Lord, in his vision, he has the total perspective on these things. And so he looks at the heart of the person that is trying to perform some service or it performing some action. He actually looks inside. He knows what each one of us thinking and is trying to do. So in this case, we have here in the Bhagavatam, Indra got puffed up by his opulence. Krishna sees this. And consequently, he was subject to the curse of Durvasa Muni. You know, and what we can see here, that Krishna's behind everything. He's the super soul in everyone. So whatever action Durvasa Muni had taken in cursing him, it was appropriate for the Supreme Lord and for Indra himself. We should never underestimate what actions or is behind the actions of anybody. Somehow our interactions with each other are directed by the Supreme Lord. And he says he's directing the wanderings of all the living entities who are sitting as on a machine made of the material energy. Material energy means that it's composed of the material elements and also the subtle body, mind and intelligence, which are subject to the modes of material nature. So we're on a sort of automatic pilot, almost all of us, actually. But this automatic pilot is, if we're sincere and we want to change, we become rightly situated in our determination. Krishna, from within, he instigates this inner strength. So it is our motive that is the most important in our day, actually. Certainly we hiccup from time to time. But what is interesting here, too, that it's in chapter 3 here. I'll just read the verses where it says how in this world, this is the beginning of Karma Yoga. And he said, work done as a sacrifice to Vishnu has to be performed. Otherwise work causes bondage in this world. Therefore, O son of Kunti, Perform your duties for his satisfaction, and in that way you will always be free from bondage. So this is linking it to the Supreme, Vishnu. That's text 9. So whatever we do, we should do it as a sacrifice. And then it says, in the beginning of creation, the Lord of all creatures sent forth generations of men and demigods, along with sacrifices for Vishnu, and blessed them, saying, be thou happy by this yogya sacrifice, because its performance will bestow upon you everything desirable for living happily and achieving liberation. The demigods, being pleased by the sacrifices, will also please you, and thus, by the cooperation between men and demigods, prosperity will reign for all. So here we have a disturbance in that that sequence, and it's all caused by this moment of being puffed up by Lord Indra. It's an amazing thing. It's just triggered this curse, Devasa Muni, and then the demigods being disturbed and in war with the demons have been defeated. They can't perform their sacrifices. So everything and poverty reigns because of some irresponsible small action with a garland. It's so far-reaching, and it's caused so much misery. People have died. You know, demigods are dying. They cannot be revived. This is such a significant thing. You know, when you read Bhagavatam and you start to see the nature of what is happening in the Bhagavatam, and how such a small thing can have such a serious consequence. So likewise with ourselves, a word out of place, and I'm preaching to myself here, or just the thought out of place, which precipitates the word out of place. You know, this is the most difficult thing that we have to be, we should be aware of in our relationships with each other, because relationship between devotees is very, very important. What to speak of other persons. But we can see, because we live together in a sort of a community, as it were, and this was the thing that my son noted when he came here. He says, this community is very special, he said. He wasn't a follower of our practice, but he, by observation, he saw the nature of how diverse we are. He started speaking to the different devotees and what they're like, and just observing and getting the impression of the atmosphere here. And actually, he gave me a better impression of what I didn't see. It was his comments that really helped me. So he came here, you know, to see me, you know. It was by his mercy, who's not a so-called devotee, but it was by his mercy he gave me much more understanding of what is here, actually, in the Vaishnav community here, the community of aspiring devotees, that we all, how we're interacting with each other. And so this was very interesting and educational for me. So, therefore, our appreciation of each other should be like the moral of a story. You know, like in Indra, he didn't have this consideration. You know, Prabhupada says, when you get opulence, it can be such a destructive thing, because it gives us what the body wants. It gives us what the mind wants. It gives us and our so-called intelligence something to work on that in some way that we'll get some sense gratification out of it, and we'll want to use it for our benefit. So instead of Krishna's benefit, devotee's benefit, very quickly we can be deluded. Likewise, when we get opulence, we should be very careful with how we use it in Krishna's service. I can remember the person that I first met in to do with Krishna consciousness. He was a Prabhupada disciple. Shri Shri Radha Gokul Nandiki Jai, Shri Shri Gornitai Ki Jai, Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai. He introduced me to this Krishna consciousness. It was just a talk on the Isle of Wight. And gradually I got to know him because I became interested. He gave me a Bhagavad Gita and we exchanged letters. And he gave me this. I went to visit him when he was staying in Hastings. And he told me that because he was rich, he was a rich person, he had some, you know, somehow he's one of these people that somehow wealth would come to him, that there was the time when he was in Hawaii and he gave a lot of money to the temple for developing something there. And actually what happened, the person who was in charge of the project ran off with the money. And he went to Prabhupada. Well, you know, actually he was involved with Prabhupada, serving him at that time. And he became very upset. And Prabhupada noticed his mood. And he said, Prabhupada inquired, he said, "Are you okay? Is there anything wrong?" And so it all came out that how he'd given this money to the temple, and that this person was going to give it to this project. And instead of getting sympathy from Prabhupada, he got chastised. He got chastised because he was not checking out the use of the money, how it was to be used, what safeguards were there, and that it was such a big amount of money. He said, "It's just foolishness, sheer foolishness, lack of intelligence," he said. So, though trying to use it in Krishna's service, you know, very nice, motive was there, but Prabhupada, he gave him another lesson, that it's a bit deeper than have, you know, it says sometimes the road to hell is paved with good intentions, you know. We give money to an alcoholic, they'll go and buy another drink, isn't it? So we put money in the hands of others, or any particular opulence. We have to see who we're giving to. We have to understand it's just not a sort of, yeah, give them the money, that's it, you know, I've done my bit for Krishna. No. We have to be very considerate of how we use money, how we receive money. And so there's so much to learn from all this. You know, the manor, we have so many patrons, so many wonderful supporters. And if we waste what they give us in terms of their time, in terms of their generosity, and they may give us some socks or whatever, you know, that we must appreciate. We cannot waste anything. So it's this interaction with devotees and their generosity and the opulences that we may receive or don't have, that we shouldn't take anything for granted, because it's Krishna's. It's come from Krishna. and that we can disregard it. We can be wasteful in so many ways just by our consciousness, that we're not mindful. I was listening to lecture this morning, actually, by Bhaktitirtha Swami. He says we have to be mindful of whatever we're doing, conscious of whatever we're doing, because somehow or other, by habit, we're not conscious. Whether it be Krishna conscious or just aware of our fallen nature. You know, it causes us to do so many things, to be inconsiderate of other people's feelings. You know, we're the center. It doesn't matter. Well, they were in the way. You know, out of my way, I'm serving my guru. You know, this sort of thing. And we knock people over. We are rude to them. So many things. Because we're not conscious of maybe our interaction or the tone of our voice or our thoughts that create the tone of our voice. You know, I'm preaching to myself in this. So it says here, so we should be sober. Prabhupada uses the word, and also in the Bhagavad Gita, it says, the happiness and distress, they come like winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception, O son of Bharat. And we must learn to tolerate them without... a sober person is not disturbed by this. We must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. So we've got to be sober. But it doesn't mean we're not happy. But we'll be happy if we are sober. Because then our interactions won't bring about the catastrophes like Lord Indra is caused by his moment of lack of thought, lack of consideration, lack of appreciation with this garland. You know, so it's very important to note, whatever we do, our consciousness may be full. We must be mindful, as Bhaktitirtha Swami, of those things that we do, what we receive, how we receive them, and what we do with them. And understand that everything is Krishna's anyway. Like ourselves, we are Krishna's. And if we understand that, because it says also in 4:35, he says, having obtained this knowledge from the realized soul, you'll never fall again into illusion. For by this knowledge, you will see that all living beings are part of the Supreme, and they're mine. So, if we start to realize this, that each one of us are part of Krishna, and I don't mean from an intellectual point, but they're dear to Krishna. Everybody's dear to Krishna. So we can't even speak ill of another person. This is why criticism is looked upon so heavily by Krishna. Our criticism should be actually glorification. There are certain advanced devotees, they do nothing but glorify. They chastise their disciples, they criticize their disciples, but they glorify each other. And this is the point. See, it's the guru's job to criticize. That's what he's there for. He's there to help us improve in some way. And however they do it, whatever way they do it, it's really a development of our character. You know, it's like being in the army. You know, somehow, I remember all the people I met, there was conscription in the days. People were forced to go in the army, you know. At a certain age, they had to all join the army. But the people I always met after they came out of the army, they always said it was good for them in some way. The discipline, what it brought to them. And that they were humbled by it. you know, it was a good thing. So no matter what, this humbling process is very good, but so is glorification. You know, there are certain advanced devotees here. They do nothing but glorify people. And they boost, you know, when we're down, they boost us. And so we need their help in this. They see some spark in a person and they'll glorify that. And we may be complete nonsense in all other aspects, but they'll take that spark. They'll look at that. They won't want to criticize at all because they know it's not good for anybody unless it's for their betterment out of love. That's different. Then this is the process. So poor Indra here, he started off a war, actually. You know, a little lack of consideration with a garland. And the demigods were completely bereft of their power. This curse of Devasa Muni, this great sage. And Krishna was behind it. So something to learn here. I think we'll finish there. Just a few minutes now for comments or questions.